What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Hustle and Flowchart podcast with your boys, Matt Wolf and Joe Fear.
Wiki, check wiki, it. Wiki.
Hey, yo, yo, sup, sup. This is Joe Fear, and over there to my right, and now my left, and now I'm right in front of me because I'm walking, is Mr. Matt Wolf.
Hello.
Today is part two, another part tour of our series, and this one is about cryptocurrency and trading / investing with our main man, Mr. Michael Taggart.
Yep.
And we had him on, you know, a couple weeks back or whenever it was published. I don't know right now. but he talked all about the blockchain, cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, Ethereum.
Basically, he gave a good explanation of how it all works, why you would want it, what the implications are. It was pretty much a masterclass on why you should be caring about blockchain and Bitcoin.
Yep.
This time, we wanted to talk tactics.
Yes.
We wanted to talk, how do we invest in it? How do we trade it? How do we make money with it? How do we automate it? We went into all those topics.
Tons of things. So, like, if you've ever traded, you know, if you've never had traded stocks, Bitcoin, crypto, none of that stuff, don't worry about it. This is good for newbies. It's good for experts. There's a lot of cool things here that he basically teaches you, and you can get running today if you wish. And so there's a lot to be said and learned here.
Yeah. If you don't know anything about blockchain or Bitcoin or any of that kind of stuff, make sure you listen to our part one with him. That's where we dive really deep into how it all works.
See.
But this one, we're going to actually get into some more technical stuff and dive into how to trade it, how to store it, and all that good stuff.
Let's go. All right. We're back for round number two with Mr. Taggart. How you doing, man?
You know, I'm doing pretty good today.
Yeah. Good. It's good to hear that.
Yeah.
You know,
just got back from LA.
Okay.
Yeah, it was nice and sunny. I was hanging out on Catalina Island, and then I showed back up here and it's like 35 degrees.
I heard. So, yeah, it's cold as hell out there, but
in San Diego, we got a heat wave right now. So.
Right. Yeah. We're in shorts and no shoes right now. So sorry.
That's okay. I'm not wearing anything right now. So.
Typical.
Awesome. All right. So just let's preface this real quick. This is actually round two with Mr. Michael Taggart. So if you haven't listened to round one with him, you need to listen to that because that's where you kind of get the whole backstory of what Michael was doing and how he got into blockchain and Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and a whole overview and educational course essentially on blockchain and cryptocurrencies. So listen to that if you haven't already, because we're not going to really go into the basics as much in this call. So I just want to disclaim that before we dive in.
Yeah. Yeah. And this one, we kind of want to focus more on the investing side, trading, maybe not so short term. And we'll get into that. We'll see the difference between short term, long term, and a whole load of questions we got from our users too, or our listeners. So yeah, man, I guess
let's dive in.
Yeah, let's just get straight to it. So in terms of, I guess let's explain short-term and long-term investing, because you were just telling us before the call, you know, one's a lot more stressful than the other.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, back in the first call, I kind of talked about how I got involved in Bitcoin. And so one of the big things I did is, you know, number one, I have no experience whatsoever in trading, you know, stocks or doing any sort of stock, you know, just stock forex trading, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of just bought a F ton of Bitcoin. Like it was a lot, actually. Some of my friends told me I was the craziest person that they knew at the time, but
yeah.
I bought a ton of it. Like I had many thousand Bitcoins, and I basically was just sitting there and trading back and forth and doing crazy stuff. Like I did start realizing that, hey, at certain times when people are acting a certain way, I could I could sell a third of them and then sell the other two thirds of them really fast when they're freaking out and get a bunch of money. And then as they're all freaking out and dumping because they see like huge orders, like thousands of Bitcoins just getting dropped all at once, and I just go buy back low.
Right.
And so I would sit there and do like high frequency trading and different things like that. And it got to be stressful. So I did develop some software for Bitcoin trading. Now I'm not selling it anymore right now. We didn't keep it updated. I let it kind of go after Bitcoin was going down the entire time for a long time. I kind of went on to other things. I stopped being as interested in kind of frequency trading and started being more interested in developing out the ecosystem and all that. But what I was doing is EMA trading, which is like exponential moving averages, using that to profit. And I would say that I did win more than I did lose using the software. But when I was doing it by myself, I don't really have many stats for that. I made a couple of really, really good trades early on, and it double tripled my stash. And then I did some trading in between there, maybe made some, maybe lost some on some days. The big thing for me was actually exiting before it crashed all the way down from 1,200.
Wow.
Kind of got out. I got out still at when it was at 1,000. So, You know, that was good for me. But my software was the one that did it. It was just based off of some moving averages, and it was just meant to get me out during what looked to be a catastrophic, you know, breakdown for a little while and get me back in later once the market stabilized. But the problem is the market didn't stabilize enough. I just stayed out for a long, long, long time, and I kind of moved on to other stuff. So, you know, there's people who do short term. There's people who do long term trading, which is just more buying, investing, holding. Some people right now, I think a more stabilized version of trading and probably something that you're going to be able to net positive a lot easier on is just getting in on ICOs early or getting in on a pre-sale or a pre-ICO, where you're able to buy big chunks prior to the public ICO. So you get them at even a lower price than the public is getting in at the low price. So as soon as it goes live and it's able to trade, you can just sell and make an instant profit. That's almost guaranteed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do these pre-ICOs because they want to try to hit at least the minimum target goal for the ICO. For a few reasons, marketing perspective, they don't look like a bunch of assholes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not hitting a target goal or anything like that. So that's a major reason from just a mindshare standpoint and stuff like that. The other part is, you know, some of them are trying to hit their goals in general so they can knock out the project, do whatever they're doing, stuff like that. And, you know, just like any other investment opportunity that you're able to get in on before a lot of other people, they want to let the people in first that maybe are part of their community or people at their friends, family, this, that, and the other, or people who are like-minded with them, depending on rules and regulations there. I don't know if they always follow them. I can't speak to that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's different types of trading out there.
So what you're saying is with the, as far as a short-term trader standpoint, that's really the only short-term trading that you do these days is kind of get in before the ICO and then dump them when the ICO actually happens.
Pretty much. I mean, I don't really feel like sitting around and staring at charts all day and hand doing it. There are some bots that you can get into with different cryptocurrencies, different types of bots. I'm not going to go naming a bunch. I could probably give you guys one or two after the call and we could throw them up there.
Sure. Cool.
That you can just use to set some kind of trades where you buy them at a couple percent lower than the books and you sell a couple percent higher than the books. And usually you can do okay with that sort of thing. A lot of people run bot trading. It's simple and easy. But what happens is when there's a big flash crash, all those bots, they all start selling too. And they just contribute to the catastrophic crash. And a lot of people lose money over that sort of thing. So, you know, they just that's the thing with it. And so if you're going to trade, just be willing to lose everything you got when you're trading.
Always.
The best advice I could ever give, really.
So with those ICOs, I actually want to kind of dive into that for a second since you brought that up. How would somebody even find something that's in pre-ICO?
Good question.
Ooh, that is a good question. There are private groups on Telegram that you can kind of get into. You know, got to know a secret handshake, this, that, or the other. You can ask around. There's a lot of different groups. You can go to like Bitcoin Talk forum, and you can look around for different ICO groups, pre-ICO groups. There are some Ethereum-based ones out there. I'm going to give a shout out to I shouldn't do it to competitors, but sometimes I will. my homeboy Marcus, he's with a group called Co-Found It, and they basically help launch out different businesses, projects, ICOs, this, that, and the other. They've got kind of like a walled garden where they'll do an ICO launch. They allow their Co-Found It members to get in on it first, and then they'll launch it out a little bit further and stuff like that.
Nice.
And they've got their own token as well, the Co-Found It token.
Got it.
So basically, Marcus is actually up here in Boise with me, which is cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, just different groups like that.
Essentially keeping your ear to the ground at, you know, any sort of place that people who trade cryptos hang out.
Yeah, right. Stokens, you know, they've got like a walled garden. They have SEC compliant tokens, which is a very good thing. And then there's a couple of apps that I use, like ICO Alert. And there's a couple of, if you just type into Google, there's a couple of we can go over it later, but there's some couple ICO like aggregate sites that pretty much tell you like what's scheduled, what ICOs have been in the past, which ones are going on right now, which ones are scheduled, how much they made, different things like that. So you can go and look at all these ICOs that made like $200-300 million in donations, and now they're only worth like, 40 million.
Yeah, no, that's what I've been wondering for a while now. I was like, when the hell is an ICO coming? What is? I mean, yeah, I know what it is now, but how do I get in on that?
Yeah. Now you mentioned a tool called Telegram. You actually mentioned that before the call, and Joe and I just kind of pretended like we knew what you were talking about. What is Telegram?
Telegram is a encrypted like messaging service, and you can make groups. It's kind of like similar to Slack.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's encrypted. China just banned it, Telegram. And just stuff like that. But you can make channels on there. There's different traders channels on there. There's whale channels with just groups of whales. There's pump and dump channels.
Wow. Okay.
The world is yours.
So there you go. Yeah, if China bans it, you know it's good.
Yeah, right?
You can behind it. Well, cool. Actually, since the last call, I put some money into a few things. Ripple was one of them. But like so far, I'm like, I'm making little gains here and there. It's kind of based off what we were talking about. It's like, look at the team, look at what they're doing. I think those are pretty, obviously solid things, is look at the whole mission and the technology they're building.
The funny thing is Joe was actually literally looking at the team. He looked at a picture on one cryptocurrency site and said, I can't buy this. The dude's wearing a fedora and I don't like that.
I did say that. I can't trust a CEO with a fedora who has a gold chain on as well. I'm like, bro, I don't know.
Nice. I mean, Indiana Jones pimp.
He's a little funky, so maybe I can get behind it, but it's cool.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. I might be judgy too.
I'll say that's a
good point, though. You guys just brought up kind of looking around at these different ICOs or different token opportunities and trying to figure out like what would lead you to want to invest in them. So for me, some key things I look at before investing in specific coins or cryptos are, what is the project in and of itself that they're proposing? Mm-hmm. Have they been running business operations in the past on other companies? Has this company already been in business, right? Another good thing is just looking at the team. Mm-hmm. Again, checking them out, seeing if they're saying their real names or if they're not. Because, then that's just going to lead to, if they have their real names on there, there's definitely a little bit higher trust, they're able to have some sort of recourse in some markets and stuff like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Look at the team real quick on LinkedIn, do they have some solid connections in the industry and outside the industry? Do they have skills? Is their LinkedIn on point? Look at them. All sorts of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Pretty much, if you guys were going to maybe invest in a regular a physical company, what would you look at? Same sort of thing. Do they have any P&Ls? What's their roadmap look like? Do they have a white paper? Is the white paper really bare bones, or have they taken a lot of time on it? Do they have a good legal basis? Is it a security? Does it pass the Howey test?
Mm-hmm.
Or not? Or is it a utility token? Is it a utility token in just name only? And wink, wink, nudge, nudge, it's really a security, because those ones are going to be the ones that I think people are going to be really hammered on later on. I think there's going to be some government intervention here or there, something like that's going to cause people to lose some money on it.
Yeah.
So just those sorts of things are what I really look at before I invest in any altcoin.
Right.
Now, that being said, you can invest in altcoins that have no future, jack shit for teams, look horrible, this, that, and the other, just got a lot of hype and a celebrity tweeted about them, and you can make money off of it. But when you're making money, somebody else just lost money. That's going to be a fact. Somewhere somebody else lost some value somewhere, and do you want to really be a part of this is kind of like me soapboxy for a second, but do you really want to be a part of that sort of environment that breeds that sort of thing and be a part of the problem and potentially hurt or irreparably harm an industry that has a lot of promise for advancing humanity as a whole, right? If the answer is yes, you have no problem with that, then go trade that shit.
Right.
But if the answer is like, well, I kind of feel like an asshole if I did that, then just don't, and actually go invest in real products and stuff like that. Because you can do that and make really great speculatory money and not contribute to the problem.
Yeah.
And so that's what I try to do whenever I invest.
Now, there's one thing Joe and I were actually having a discussion about before this call is there's a lot of coins that seem like the sort of technology behind it and what they're trying to achieve are very, very, very similar. And it's hard to kind of tell which one could potentially win out in the future. You know, one example we were thinking of was we were looking at one called 10X and one called OMG. And both of them seem to have a method of making it easier to spend your cryptocurrencies. One's like a debit card, one's like a phone app that you can use, kind of like an Apple Pay, it seems like. But they seem very similar in what their outcome is going to be. So how would you look at two coins that seem to have similar functionality, that seem to be trying to approach the same problem, and decide, okay, this is the one that I'm going to go with? Does that even make sense? I feel like I'm rambling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. you're absolutely right. There's plenty of coins that are coming out that are similar in properties and what they're trying to accomplish. They're peeling the potato in a different way. I'm from Idaho. I say potato, plus skinning cats is really sick.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
But it's like, you mentioned Omisco, basically OMG, and you mentioned 10X. So they're all attacking the problem at slightly different angles, and my short answer to that is just spread out around your investments. Mm-hmm. If you see a couple of things that look good, look like they have promise, then just spread them around. Are you looking? Let's just say this. You know, let's say you buy in each of them for $2,000 pop, and one of them goes nowhere, and the other one goes up 10x. Mm-hmm. Are you really that stuck?
Nope.
The other one, not like shit, man. You made a hedge. You made a calculated choice to just try to play both sides. And alternatively, the other one could go up 100x, or you could lose out on both. But if you're doing that method and you're investing in some of these crypto companies early, you're gonna likely hit one really good one.
Yeah.
And I've met people here at the Boise meetup for Bitcoin who literally are just like, I don't know what I'm doing. I just bought some Ethereum and bought into this ICO, and then it launched and it blew up and I sold and I'm up like $8 million.
Wow.
And I'm like, good for you. You know,
you got lucky.
Like, and it's just people just, and so now they just take that money and they spread it around to different projects, trying to just hit another lottery ticket pretty much. And so that's what it is. But if you're doing this in an industry, again, that has a lot of technological promise, if you look at the teams, look at the record of them and see what's going on, and then you just want to make a calculated choice, then spread it around a little bit and just be smart about it.
That's smart, because it goes to the strategy Matt and I saw in one of these Facebook groups we're in, is, you know, someone going into altcoins, you know, these kind of smaller values, I think one strategy was, okay, invest in the top eight, like at any one time, and kind of
By market cap,
yeah. And spread it around that way and kind of hedge. Obviously, it's a little different than looking at what they're doing and all that stuff, ICOs and whatnot. But it was kind of like a simplified strategy of kind of what you're saying there too.
It is. And again, that you're averaging it out. What you're kind of doing is you're buying into all of them, and then you're averaging out your profit and loss on each one together. It's kind of like a fund or an index. if you think about it, that's kind of what you just did. So, there's that. Here's the other thing, and I'll point this out too. There's some people that are talking about, you know, creating decentralized exchanges and stuff like that. Those, I believe, are the future for a lot of different reasons. Centralized exchanges are just huge points of failure, and they're honeypots and this, that, and the other. And like we've got at BitShares, I'll put my BitShares hat on for a minute. We had a decentralized index, basically decentralized exchange that's been running for 3 years plus. No security incidents, no problems. Everything's super fast, and it's the world's only true decentralized exchange, 100% ran by the blockchain. So there's projects when I see people saying, you know, well, we're going to build this out, we're going to do this decentralized exchange, I'm like, there's already one out there. It's already got a track record and this. And I also know how hard it is to run a decentralized exchange and how to build one out and actually make it work correctly and things like that. And then there's competitors, like you'll see things like Waves.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to knock on Waves too much, but I will say some things like, you know, they claim to be the fastest and the world's only decentralized exchange. That's blatantly not true. Somebody just actually posted a great article today about they had about a list of 15 to 20 different huge failure points on Waves and how it's not decentralized. It's 100% centralized. It says in their white paper, their centralization. Hmm. And then they basically found all of these different problems with Waves, like the way that the passwords are stored in files that are not even encrypted.
Wow.
They're just, yeah, just things like that. Or IOTA, for instance, which is in the top 5 or 10, having some major, I mean, if you guys Google it, IOTA had some major flaws in its code. They did go back and fix it, but the problem is that the rest of their code hasn't been audited either.
Yeah.
Very well. So there's been major issues with some of that stuff. And so when you look, you just need to do a little bit of research and like find out what the problem is. Are they truly what they're saying that they are or being or things like that? Just because they're popular today, when somebody publishes a report like that, you know, they could get torched tomorrow. And if you're not on top of it, you can lose a lot of money.
So what would you recommend for someone? And this might be, you know, using the answer you already said, so you can kind of shoot it down. But what's a good, simple strategy? Someone totally green, someone brand new to crypto, how should they kind of start and just put their toe in the water?
You know, you can't really go too wrong with buying some of the top cryptos, Bitcoin, Ethereum.
Yep.
You know, Litecoin, some of those other ones, they've been around for a very, very long time. Just dip your toe in the water there. A lot of people go to Coinbase in the US initially. So when you go there, those are going to be the three that you're able to grab onto and be able to get relatively easily. Another one I would say is, this is actually a little unorthodox, but it's also a great method for people. You may have listeners who don't have a lot of money that they can really spend right now to get into crypto, but there are ways that you can earn your way.
Sure.
So you can potentially go and get some. There's some Bitcoin referral programs and stuff like that where they teach people about Bitcoin and wallets and this and that, and they give you a referral link, and you can send people to that, and you can make a couple of bucks, or they'll pay you in Bitcoin, small little pieces of Bitcoin for every person that signs up and stuff like that. So you can try to work on that as a way to earn some Bitcoin that you can then go and invest in some other cryptocurrencies. Mm. You can also go to Steam. Go to steemit.com and basically blog or, you know, post pictures or whatever your strong point is. And you can earn cryptocurrency by just providing content or curating content on the site. And you can transfer that over to exchanges and start buying other cryptocurrencies with it. So you guys don't even really need to take money out of your bank account. You know, if you got to go explain it to your wife or your husband, you know, why there's money missing.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Now they've got a shiny digital wallet on their phone. You know, it might be a hard conversation, but if you're making it a different way like that, then it's a lot easier to tell them, you know, to buzz off, you know, it's your thing.
That Steam concept is really cool. And I think you touched on it in our last episode, but I actually want to kind of dive a little bit deeper on it right now. Yeah. 'Cause I think that's really interesting. So how do you actually earn like Bitcoin or crypto or Steam coin or whatever you earn from that? How do you actually earn it by posting content? Is it like a Dig or Reddit kind of site where they upvote it and you make more based on upvote? How does that work? I'm curious.
Bingo. Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's like this. When you're upvoting and downvoting stuff, you are curating content, correct?
Yep.
You guys get that, right? And so that's one method of them being able to maintain quality control without employees, right? Or minimal employees. Mm-hmm. Another way that you're interacting or engaging is by commenting, which is adding to the content and adding to the interest or the engagement of that particular post. Because if you're continuing to add engaging comments onto it, people are going to continue to come back and it's going to get more traction, more views, and more views means more ad revenue, which means this, right? Mm. Now, Steam doesn't necessarily have ad revenue, quote unquote, yet, but, you know, you never know what's going to happen. But every website does look for impressions and views, right? So what they're doing is they're saying they're rewarding folks for adding content and curating that content. So not only just the person who did the initial story, but anybody who's actually commenting on it, anybody who's downvoting stuff. How do they get paid? Is the network pays them out for that content, similar to Reddit tips. You know, people used to be able to tip Bitcoin or tip some sort of Reddit coin or Red coin or whatever the hell they're doing over there today,
yeah.
Right? It's very, very similar to that. So it's just I publish the content and this, that, and you get paid for it. Now, there is a vesting system on the network, so you get more reputation and more clout and more ability to influence conversations and curate content if you take the money that you're making on the site and you vest it into the site and basically lock it up into an escrow. By doing that, you're saying, I'm willing to take all the money. Let's say you got $10,000 worth of coins and you put it in this escrow. You're saying, I'm willing to lock it up in there to power up my account so I can do more cool stuff. The trade-off to that is you can't instantly access it again. You've got to access it over a 13-week period. So part of that vesting helps with the liquidity of paying out other people who aren't necessarily vesting at that moment and things too. You guys see how that works? It's a lot of money. It's a lot of cash flow rolling around.
So what kind of money are we talking about? Is it like, could somebody be a full-time Steamer, or is it like a totally just like little trickles of side income kind of thing?
Full-time. I mean, there's people who are just making trickles. There's people who are traveling the world and all they do is travel blogs and post on Steemit. There's people who are making $5,000, $2,000, $10,000 on some of their posts.
Got it. Okay.
Damn. All right.
Yeah. It's nuts, man.
Now we mentioned Steem, I think, on the last time we chatted, but I don't think I totally grasped it until just now.
Right.
And now I'm kind of going, oh, shit, I actually now see how cool this is.
Right. I'm telling you right now, I mean, there's no reason you guys should ever have like a Facebook group. If you guys you guys can go clone Steem and brand it for you guys' own personal use, and you can send your whole audience there and they could, you know, roll around. There's a lot of interesting things to do with it, is what I'm saying. I think you're going to see a lot of websites forking that code or using it in some ways. Steem's made it possible, and they're continuing to make it possible for you to now have your entire website. Let's just say you have your website, but instead of using like the WordPress comments or the Facebook comments, you can use the Steem comments.
Dude.
And that means that your engagers, the people that are engaging on your website now, might potentially be making money.
They have incentive
off of engaging in content with
you. Holy shit. Yeah, no, this is like a mind-blown kind of moment. Like, we didn't grasp it until just now.
Yeah. And we will be implementing this ASAP.
No, that's really cool. I mean,
I see why I get so excited about this stuff. Because, like, we started talking about social media sites 3 years ago and how we're going to use the blockchain to go out there and change social media.
Yeah.
And just how we were going to go out there and change ad networks with it. There's ICOs that are doing ad network stuff right now.
Sure.
There's just a lot of really cool stuff that are going to impact not just our industry, not just the marketing industry, but like all websites, all the way people make money in general, just by providing the content that they're already doing. They're just opting not to go and let Facebook monetize their content.
Control everything, yeah.
Right, because, I mean, they're not getting paid for shit on there, you know? They could choose to go somewhere else and get paid, and they get a value out of it, and it's turning everything more micro, just like the whole pendulum swing right now is going back towards local and micro and like that. It's the same thing.
Decentralizing,
dude. Now, can't you actually buy Steem coins as well?
Yeah, so, you can buy Steem coins, and you can trade them around. I'm going to tell you guys pro tip right now. Steem blockchain has no fees. So Steem's actually the easiest crypto to move around from place to place, and it's the cheapest one to move around place to place. So if you've got one crypto and you can exchange it over to Steem, then you can move it from point A, B, Z, anywhere you want to until you want to settle it out. And any trades in between, as long as it's on the Steem blockchain, are 100% transaction free.
Okay, so I can totally see how this is sort of the future of social media, because it's taking something that people are doing every single day anyway and saying, hey, you know that thing you're already doing? How about we pay you for it? And I mean, I don't see why people wouldn't be sort of jumping at that opportunity. So
yeah, or some kind of reward. Like we were talking about this before, it could just be a token that's redeemable for something else. Any kind of incentive like that. Yeah, that's cool.
That's brilliant. Okay,
and for the listeners, really quick, if you don't understand, again, the implications of blockchain and the technology behind it, go listen to episode one and then come back over here.
Yeah.
And your mind will be blown even more.
All right, so I want to shift back to the sort of trading discussion again. Are there specific things that you're looking for to get out? You know, that's sort of one of the things that I've always found trading you know, difficult with trading, even with stocks, is, all right, when's the right time to get out? Are there sort of markers you're looking for? Are there, I know you don't do really much technical analysis. It's mostly fundamental analysis. So you're not really looking at charts and graphs and, you know, candlesticks and all that kind of stuff. You're kind of more looking for news and in staff changes and things like that. So I'm curious what kind of things you look at to say, okay, this is probably a good time to move my coins out of here.
It's like a full-time job trying to stay up on crypto right now, honestly. It is. I mean, I've got like news flashes every 10 seconds on my screen, and Russia says that they're going to ban all cryptocurrency exchanges, and then 3 hours later, Russia's finance minister says, well, we may just have miners register and regulate exchanges, you know, and in between those 2 hours, you know, all hell breaks loose. Or it's just crazy stuff. So things to look for is just people making, you know, big statements, or large governments making large statements, things like that. Signs to look for, get in or get out. Like, you know, somebody just announced the other day that they were going to redeem all Bitcoin on the end of October. I don't remember the specific day. It was like the 25th, but I could be wrong, for Bitcoin Gold. And so basically, if you're holding Bitcoin, then on that day, all you do is you take your keys and you load them into this wallet over here, and they'll just give you some free shiny Bitcoin Gold. Well, what is that going to do? Well, that's going to run up the price on Bitcoin, because everybody wants to get their free Bitcoin Gold. So now everybody's going to be accumulating Bitcoin as much as they can prior to that date. And so you're going to see a run up. Well, what's going to happen after that date? Well, people are going to sell off that Bitcoin because they maybe liquidated some of their other cryptocurrency holdings in the meantime to acquire those Bitcoin. Well, now all those other cryptocurrencies that they sold, they could be down a lot lower than what they sold at. So they're going to take that Bitcoin and they're going to go back over there and buy back in. Right. Yep. So Bitcoin's going to go down and alts are going to go up. And so if you think about it and you look at it, you look at things that have dates like that, and you watch ICOs, well, what's going to happen? What's that ICO? What are they accepting on their ICO? Is it going to be Ethereum? And is that ICO got, you know, huge backing? Chances are Ethereum's going to go up. So you may want to buy a bunch of Ethereum and let these guys run it up on the ICO, and then mid ICO, get the hell out of Dodge on the Ethereum, because same thing's going to happen. Once, you know, all the donations go through, those companies are going to liquidate.
Yeah.
You know, that's sense. What happens. It's things like that. Hell, in the last two days since the 8th of October, you know, some cryptocurrency exchanges went about liquidating a lot of their fee pools that they've been holding on to for a long time, because they're liquidating it to Bitcoin to take advantage of Bitcoin Gold, the free Bitcoin Gold. Why not, right? As an exchange, it makes sense. Why would you hold all these other alts when you can just liquidate and throw into Bitcoin real quick?
For sure.
Get some Bitcoin Gold for sure, and then whatever. And so what happened is, all at the same time, one of the major exchanges just sold all of their alts all at the same time. And if you go look at the 8th, go look at some charts real quick, you can see just like complete bloodbath. Right. For all sorts of alts. Wow. And that's what it did, because they literally sold like millions upon millions and upon millions of tokens of all these different currencies all at the same time. So sometimes you can't catch it. But if you could catch it fast enough and you see that going on, get the hell out, man.
Yeah.
You know, because some of these cryptocurrencies have lost 10, 20, 30%.
Wow.
In the last 24 hours, 48 hours.
Wow.
Now, do you look at that as an opportunity to buy, or do you tend to kind of stick with the herd a little bit, because, you know, you do have evidence that it's probably going to go up even more?
Well, I do look at it as an opportunity to buy, especially, again, I look at the project real quick. Is it more of a legacy coin? Has it been around for a long time? Do they have solid this and this? Chances are then it's going to bounce back. And so you get in. There's some coins that you may have wanted to get in on ICO. You might be able to get in on pre-ICO rates right now. You know, so that might be an opportunity for you to just buy and just hold on to it for a year or two and see what happens. I think, again, and I said this on the first call, a lot of cryptocurrencies are 2 to 5 year hold. And if you don't do anything else, just don't even pay attention to the news and just pretend like it never happened and come back in 2 to 4, 5 years. Chances are you will have made money on those.
Yeah,
that's smart.
And obviously, those would be more the more established ones, like you were saying, right?
Yeah. Like I really do believe Bitcoin is going to be going up pretty high here in the next year or two.
Yeah.
And some of it's going to depend upon, you know, capital controls in other countries, I think that there's going to be some financial breakdown in some places. And whenever dollars and fiat currency weaken, Bitcoin gets stronger and stronger and stronger.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some crazy sort of forecasts, I guess you would call them, from some big name people who actually see Bitcoin getting up into the six figures per coin. I mean, the dude from McAfee Antivirus, I think, said that he expects Bitcoin to hit $250,000 per coin.
Or else.
Yeah,
or else he has to take the McAfee challenge.
That's right.
I don't know. We call it the McAfee guarantee now.
Is that what he said? Check his Twitter to see what we're talking about.
Exactly. No, I just type in the McAfee guarantee. Somebody the other day told me that they guaranteed they'd show me how to make an extra $10,000 a month. I said, what kind of guarantee? You take the McAfee guarantee challenge?
Then I'll go with you.
Yeah, they said no, that they weren't really good.
Yeah, the guarantee wasn't that strong.
That should be my new, do you guarantee that?
Okay, so I want to jump back to something you were talking about a second ago when you brought up Bitcoin, gold, and that sort of thing. Can you explain what a fork is, or a hard fork, that kind of thing? Because I know with Bitcoin, it happened recently with Bitcoin Cash. And now it looks like it's going to happen again with Bitcoin Gold, but I have no clue what's going on there. I don't even get what's happening.
I think it's hilarious, honestly. I called this months ago before the first hard fork, just when they started first announcing that they were going to update and that there was some miners saying, we don't want to do that. I said, oh, watch what's going to happen here. You're going to see a split, four, five, six of them in the next few months. Popping off, and all they're doing is they're literally splitting right off of Bitcoin, extracting some value out of the Bitcoin market cap directly over there. They're basically doing ICOs without any of the work. Mm. It's hilarious. They're doing all the ICO work. All they're doing right now is just the hype up until the snapshot. So here's what it is. Basically, they're saying that they are going to not continue to process transactions on the Bitcoin chain, and they're going to take their processing power and they are going to take a clone of the Bitcoin chain and they're going to clone it and then go off on their own. So it's kind of like you're going down one road one day and you're all in the same bus and this, that, and the other. Or let's say you've got a caravan of people and you're all working together as a team and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden one of them says, up ahead, there's a road and there's a fork in it and we're going to go that way. And you guys argue about it. And eventually, everybody decides, you know what? We'll agree to disagree, peace out. Everybody goes their way. One goes one way, one goes the other. They all have the map from before, but now they're each going a separate way. Or if somebody just says, screw this, I'm making a road over there because I don't like the way that you guys are going down this road. And this road up here looks like crap anyways. And I'm going to go make a new one. Plus I can do it better. And so they just turn over and they just four wheel off on their own. And some people split off with them and they go with them and some people don't and they carry on. It's essentially what it is. So they're cloning Bitcoin and they're calling it something else and they're pushing some of their mining power and their processing power over there. And they're going to run that transaction network just like that. Now, in order to entice people to participate and to be interested in it and to have some sort of value, they're saying things like, we will give you free Bitcoin, or let's just say, for instance, Bitcoin Gold or Bitcoin Cash is what they did too.
Yeah.
We'll give you free Bitcoin Cash. All you need to do is come over here and drop in your Bitcoin address information and this, and we'll just give you free money in your account to start messing around with it. That's essentially what they're doing. They're doing that so they can get people to assess a value to it and then start transferring other value like Bitcoin and other currencies over onto their network to buy their stuff, which is then going to give it some viability and and set some price floors and stuff like that for it. So it actually gives the coin more and more value and legitimacy as soon as they do that and they get some participation. So their goal is just get as much participation as possible. That's all it really is. Now, I wrote an article a couple months ago about Bitcoin changing hard forking and this and that. And I just said the same thing. I swear to God, they must have read the article because I said Bitcoin is a great store of value, very similar to gold. And they probably said, hey, Bitcoin gold. But I said Bitcoin's a good store of value like gold, but it's just like gold in that it's heavy, it's clunky, and it's slow to move around and stuff like that. And so it's a great store of value, but if you want a medium of exchange, it's not the best medium of exchange. Right. And that was my argument, is that It's great at what it does. It stores value. But to exchange it from person to person to person to person, it's slow, slower than a lot of technologies that are out there. It's more expensive too, more expensive than a lot of other technologies out there. You can send Bitcoin and spend, you know, $2, $5, $10 or even more to send one transaction when there's other technologies right now that you can send anywhere for free, like Steam, or BitShares, which is like one penny to send any amount anywhere in the world or 3 seconds or less. So those are better mediums of exchange, you know, than Bitcoin, because you got to wait 5-10 minutes for a transaction to get finished and this, that, and the other, right? So that's kind of what that means. So Bitcoin Gold is interesting. I think they're just taking the premise that Bitcoin is a good store of value, and that's kind of the premise that they're going on with it.
So how would somebody actually get their Bitcoin Gold? Because I actually owned some Bitcoin when the hard fork happened last time with, what was it called, Bitcoin Cash. And I never actually ended up getting any Bitcoin Cash because I didn't understand what was going on. And I just had my money sitting in Coinbase. I didn't have it in any of the, you know, the more complex trading platforms, I guess you could call them. It was just in Coinbase, but, you know, nothing ever came out of it for me. So I'm curious how that whole process works, and if somebody owns Bitcoin or wants to get into Bitcoin now before that fork happens, you know, what do they do to make sure they get what's coming to them?
Well, you don't want to keep your, so here's how it works. Like, if you wanted to get your Bitcoin Cash, you should have your Bitcoin in a wallet that is not in an exchange. Now, I'm not sure about whether Coinbase counts or not, but I would say it's probably not safe, or you wouldn't be able to use it to redeem it. You need to have it in a downloadable Bitcoin wallet, one that you have access to your private keys and your public keys and all that sort of stuff. So any sort of Bitcoin wallet that allows that sort of thing. I like blockchain.info as a good web wallet that you have access to your private keys on and stuff like that. So if you have your Bitcoin in an exchange account, you probably don't have access to private keys on your account the same way, and you can't claim those tokens.
Interesting.
Kind of how that works. So you'll want to have it in something like MetaMask is an Ethereum wallet. Blockchain.info holds Ethereum and Bitcoin. So I usually just recommend just throwing it in Blockchain.info. It's one of the oldest wallets that's ever been around. They've got good security. You can make those wallets pretty secure with all the security features that they have on there. That's the easiest way. You just throw it in there, and then you can just redeem them with your keys. Now, don't hold it in exchange wallets. Typically, you won't be able to redeem any of those coins.
Got it. Okay, so most of my coins right now, and I believe Joe's too, we've got them in Bittrex right now. Is that considered a wallet or is that an exchange?
That's an exchange wallet. You wouldn't be able to redeem unless Bittrex says that they have a way to help you redeem them. I wouldn't have them in there.
And that goes back
to the first conversation. I said I wouldn't even hold my coins in any centralized exchange unless I was actively trading. The second I'm done actively trading, I am moving them directly back out.
Get out.
So safer.
Okay, yes. So that's a good sort of segue, because one of our questions on here was about wallets, exchanges, offline wallets, hardware wallets, that kind of stuff. Do you have any recommendations? Do you tend to hold your stuff in like an offline hardware wallet that's not even connected to the internet, or do you tend to hold them in like a blockchain.info type wallet?
Well, good question. I would never recommend holding them in any centralized exchange for a lot of different reasons. That's a big thing. Second thing is that I typically stay away from web type wallets. I did mention blockchain.info. They are one of the exceptions. MetaMask is a browser type wallet. I like that one, as well as just quick and easy Ethereum transactions should I need to do something with that. And then other than that, I typically use downloaded wallets that are on my computer. The reason being, on a web wallet, if it doesn't have 2FA and it doesn't have throttling on logins, then somebody could attempt to try to brute force your password. That's totally possible for people to do. I don't care how hard people say it is. Believe me, there are people who take that as a personal challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Especially and they get in attached. Sometimes.
Yeah.
So having a downloadable wallet means that they would actually have to access your personal device and then be able to access and get in through your passwords and stuff like that. It's another layer of security. If you really want to, if you've got a lot of your wealth and assets and you don't plan on trading actively or anything like that, it's really not a stretch to throw it onto a USB device, mm-hmm. you know, and have some wallet files on your USB device,
right.
Have a Trezor, kind of hard wallet, like a actual physical wallet for it. Mm-hmm. There are, you know, you can have an old laptop, any old laptop, you know, that doesn't connect to the internet. You can just make sure it doesn't have any access to Wi-Fi or anything and have a wallet on there. Mm-hmm. You can load your funds and just hold them on there. And whenever you need access to them, you just spit out the recovery file, go over to your computer that's got a connection and load that recovery file into a wallet on that computer, and boom, you're accessed and you're live on the internet. But
yeah,
it comes down to this. There's going to be more and more and more security incidents, mm-hmm. more and more and more devices hacked. If you have mobile wallets on your phone, you are absolutely taking a risk all the time, because there's just so many apps on your phones that
you're always connected to.
Can allow backdoor access, right?
Yeah.
On top of that, you know, hackers can try to gain access to your phone through other means and potentially be able to get into some of these things. So it's just really, it's really risky to hold anything on mobile phones. Also, this is interesting, but like Department of Homeland Security, you know, they published a bulletin saying if you're going out of the country or into the country and you've got a USB device with a bunch of Bitcoin on it, you have to declare it if it's over $10,000, because it's a monetary instrument, is what they're saying.
Wow.
Now, I disagree, because IRS says it's property and it's not money. So, you know, it's kind of confusing.
It's a gray area. Yeah.
So do you want to be that guy arguing that in federal court? Probably not. But the point is just what I typically do, and I find this to be easy, is that I use highly encrypted mail services, and I can email myself from that mail service to that mail service the recovery keys, and then I can log in to that mail service from anywhere in the world, use my 2FA and a couple of other things to make sure that it's super secure, and then I have that in a super secure, you know, location. Mm-hmm. It's kind of on a cloud, but not really on a cloud in that manner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I can access it without actually traveling with it, so I'm not crossing borders.
Yeah.
Now, we were listening to an interview at one time, and they were talking about how with, you know, Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, you literally could take your number, whatever, I'm not quite sure all the terminology yet, I'm still learning it, but you could take your number, write it on a piece of paper, delete every instance of it that you find on the web, and as long as you have that paper accessible, you can access your Bitcoin at some point.
Right. You can basically do what's called a paper wallet, mm-hmm. and you can print out the paper wallet and wipe out everything and just have that paper wallet, and all you need is the information on there in order to access your coins. Just, you know, if that's the only copy and your house burns down, you're going to be one sad guy. Just make sure maybe photocopy it or take a picture of it and email it to a super secure encrypted account. You know?
Oh, yeah. No, I definitely see the downsides of that strategy for storing it. But I didn't totally grasp that concept until this call of how that actually works.
And here's this popped in my head for some reason, but like with people dying, let's just say that, like if a lot of people are bringing that stuff offline or in places where no one else knows, they have these hard, you know, what mm-hmm. happens, because it's a finite amount of stuff out, you know, like Bitcoin, for instance.
Yeah, Bitcoin,
like,
a lot of Bitcoin currency has been lost already, hasn't it?
I mean, probably 10%.
Yeah, so just imagine, I mean, it's still early. What if, you know, but just a bunch of people start dying who are invested in Bitcoin? Like, what happens with that shit? I mean,
it's not accessible anymore. It's not in public circulation.
Right.
It eventually pushes the value of those other coins up, especially. Okay. Yeah. Somebody sees that coin or that account hasn't been accessed or opened or moved anything in years or something like that. It's reasonably able to deduce that they may have lost access to that account.
Yeah.
I mean, supply and demand, right? The supply, yeah. if those are gone, that just means the supply
They're
is
gone.
Less.
Yeah. That's
right?
interesting.
So that's a good point, and you're absolutely right. So just be careful with that sort of thing. There are some blockchain industry softwares. I'll mention BitShares again for a minute.
Yeah.
BitShares can allow for multi-sig logins on wallets. So I can say, if anything happens, basically I could say this, inside my wallet, I can designate, let's say, 6 different people in my family to all have access to the wallet with certain percentages, with certain weights to each person. So I can make it so my mom and my dad both have 51%. So that means that either one of them can log in my wallet anytime and transfer stuff around, move stuff around, do whatever they need to do. But I can have my siblings at 15% each. So it would take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them in order to hit 55%,
right,
which would then enable all of them. So they'd all have to turn a nuclear key at the same time in order to access my shit. That would mean that they'd have to have complete collusion among my siblings, which isn't unheard of. or, you know what I mean? Or one of my parents, or, you know, a parent. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so you gotta have the parents at 49. So that means it would take a parent and one child, all the children, or both parents.
Got it. No, that makes sense. Right. So that's a good little
fail safe. So those things are possible right now with current technology. You're going to see people coming up with those kind of things more. Mm-hmm. There's also ways where you can lock up funds and proposals. So let's say you just don't trust yourself to trade.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, if I have it, I just might trade it. So you can actually propose to yourself or propose to another account to send them money and have a certain date on there and then accept that proposal. And then the blockchain will lock it up into an escrow until that date and you can't access it for nothing.
There you go.
There's a lot of things that you can do with it. So, you know, somebody's 18th birthday, you know, different things like that. So multi-sig technology, logging in, all that stuff is super doable. You're going to see some more of that. And you should always be careful with who you give the password to or access to. Because I'll tell you one thing. Irreversible transactions is no joke.
All right. So this is probably the last topic we're going to dive into. Maybe
I have one.
Oh, Joe's got a different topic.
What are you going to ask? Okay. I don't know what you're going to ask. Can't read your mind, man.
All right. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the numbers and keeping track of everything. Because I think, was that what you were going to ask?
Yes.
Okay. I think Joe and my biggest struggle with all of the cryptocurrency stuff is understanding how much the value is in US dollars with what we have. Because, you know, you're buying, you know, let's say a Bitcoin or an Ethereum or a Litecoin or something like that with cash. And then once you've got that Bitcoin, then you're buying altcoins with that Bitcoin. So there's like a couple degrees of separation from the US dollar. And we have like crazy spreadsheets and shit like that that we're trying to use to wrap our head around the value of our actual currency. And that's been a big struggle for us, and we can't be
it's not only that, it's conversion, it's tracking where it's at, the fees are another element as well.
So just keeping our heads wrapped around that all the time has been literally our biggest struggle.
And currently,
sounds to me like a job or like a gap opportunity for you gentlemen. You know what I mean?
It
like,
really does. No,
it really is something that big where you guys are identifying a major problem with cryptocurrencies right now, and that you have to have all these spreadsheets and you have to have all these different things. You need to download all of your transactions from every exchange and cross-reference them and this and that. Yeah. That sounds doable. Like anybody wants to do that sort of thing. Kevin Bombino from Kraken. He also has he co-founded Press Advantage with me and some other guys.
Yeah.
He had created some spreadsheets. This is back in 2013 to help people with their cryptocurrency tax earnings and figuring that sort of thing out. It comes down to just long-term and short-term capital gains is really what it comes down to. Right now, so you only have to pay short term or long term right now. Now, this again, I'm not a financial advisor, legal advisor, don't have a law degree. None of this is intended as that type of advice. But with that said, you're supposed to in the US pay capital gains either short or long term, but it's only when you exit crypto. It kind of makes you not want to leave crypto, really.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And it makes it really tough for us. Because honestly, and I'm not meaning to scare anybody, but it could potentially put anybody at risk for an IRS audit if they really want to go after you. Mm-hmm. And then that's no fun. Like, that's like the worst thing in the world, really.
Been there.
So, that's fun. Yeah, that's a gap opportunity for a lot of people right now. There's multiple blockchains, multiple exchanges. How are you supposed to keep track of all that? That's a really hard question.
And the only way this is just from our initial digging, but we found a spreadsheet that was created by someone else online that pulls in, you know, real time prices or values, you know, of each thing, and you just kind of plug in when you invest in the at what amount. So it's cool. It's given us a rough estimate.
It gives you a rough estimate, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't give you exact numbers. And all they need is one time where they're like, oh, you put the wrong decimal
totally.
In the wrong place. And you're
And it doesn't account for fees either. So, I mean, the numbers are probably slightly higher than actuality because there's no fees accounted for it on it either. But, I mean, the biggest issue is the most of the exchanges seem to show the price of coins and tokens in relation to Bitcoin and not in relation to US dollar. So we're constantly doing like a double conversion. We're converting that to Bitcoin and then figuring out the value of that amount of Bitcoin back to the US dollar. And it's just, it makes our head spin sometimes.
Yeah. And that is the toughest part. It truly, truly is. So it's just, this is the problem with, we'll change that word. We'll say this is the challenge with an emerging industry like this, where there are kinks like this to be worked out. If you guys could come up with a solution for people to basically download from their wallets, export some sheets and be able to upload them, and it would do the calculations, including fees and stuff like that, you guys would have a $1 million business tomorrow. You know, that sort of this is the reality, man.
Yeah. And it's only getting bigger. So
and there's more coins popping onto the market, seems like daily. So it's not, the problem's not going to go away.
No, it absolutely won't. And it's going to get figured out one of these days by somebody. So, you know, somebody smart just come along and say, I've got a little time and some money, or I've got a programming team that could throw at this. That's a huge thing.
Yeah.
I typically don't really sell a lot of my cryptocurrency anymore. Right. I'm typically in. If I do convert it to fiat in any shape or form, then that's where I would need to take the accounting for it. I try to do one for ones, like using BitUSD, because it's pegged to the dollar, so it makes converting out of digital pretty easy. So consider that.
Interesting. Now, what's your take on, you've got China outlawing ICOs and other countries constantly popping up threatening to do that kind of stuff. What's your take on that? And, you know, do you think at some point there's going to be multiple countries that don't even let you operate in cryptocurrencies? I mean, where do you think everything's going to go with that?
So really, I mean, I don't feel like these countries are going to be able to stop it no matter how hard they try, mostly because people are stubborn and they are into it. And I don't care what you say, you know, you're going to scare a bunch of Chinese people off for a little while and they're going to be right back in.
Sure. All right, so let's wrap this sucker up because it's going. We've covered a lot here, man. It's been good. So I guess what are some? I guess the last way we could wrap up is just where should we direct people to go check your stuff out? Maybe some cool resources, anything that can help out.
For our stuff, let me give a couple shout outs real quick. We created the Hero, which is the kind of anti-dollar, I like to call it. And so I don't know if I said this on the last call, but the Hero is the United States dollar value back from 1913. So what a United States dollar should be valued at right now is a little over $157, close to $158, mm-hmm. which means that you could buy a Corvette for around like $800 right now if you're using dollars from 1913. Mm-hmm. And then that's true story stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's, $65,000-$70,000 car for $800. That's crazy.
Wow.
right? And so I've got the Hero. So you can find more information about that at sovereignhero.com. We also have a website that's coming online here very, very soon. The site's up and you can actually go and you can sign up to get free coins to trade around and play around with right now. And that one's at billionherocampaign.com. And with that site, we're just using that to teach people how to use cryptocurrencies, teach people how to give to causes and donate to disaster relief, all sorts of different things like that. So those things. And then I've got a digital settlement company called Remedio. So people can feel free to cash out of cryptocurrencies into fiat currencies to their bank account or to debit cards. And you can do anywhere from $0 to $5,000 transactions on debit cards, and then $0 to $50,000 transactions at your bank account.
Wow.
And you can use about 60, 65, 70 different cryptocurrencies to settle right into accounts. It can be your account or anybody else's. And that's at Remitio.com. And we're really busy. I'm also going to be speaking at Latin American blockchain conference in Mexico in Cabo. And that is, I believe, the November 8th and 9th, or 9th and 10th. I'm going to have to look against. I'm shooting from the hip right now on the phone.
Yeah.
And then I'll also be in Prague speaking next February. And we're looking at that around the, I think, the 21st, 22nd of February at a blockchain conference out there. And then I'll be speaking at FinTech Austin sometime next month, and I might be there later this month too, or I might send one of our crew down there for that. So I'm a busy guy,
dude. No kidding, cool. Man. Well, check him out. Yeah, if you haven't already, you know, Mike, you're always on top of everything, and we'll be doing a round three, I'm sure, pretty
at some point
soon.
Yeah.
And I'm now
anytime,
going,
guys. You
I'm
just
gonna,
let me know.
I'm gonna load up on Bitcoin now to get. Yeah, before this October 25th thing.
I'm going to go start I'm going to go start steaming it up, I think.
I'm on Steam it right now. So yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, man, that's what you should do. Go steamroll it. So steam have fun with it.
Awesome, right, man. Yeah, thank you so much for all of this. I mean, you've spent so much time with us over these last two calls, and we really, really appreciate it. We've learned so much, and I know everybody else is too. So thanks so much for that.
Absolutely, guys, and I appreciate being asked to and giving some knowledge, wisdom, and some sarcasm to you guys.
Always.
And
bring it.
Always, man. Always appreciate it. So again, thank you for having me on the Hustle and Flowchart podcast. You guys are awesome, man. Hell, and I'll make sure and send this out to my tribe too.
Thanks, my man.
Appreciate it, man.
Cool. Have a good one. See ya.
Take care, guys.
Hey, thank you for listening to this podcast. Now, if you want to learn more and hear from us every single month, which a lot of people do, it's pretty fun. We actually write this thing called the Evergreen Profits Letter, and that is a printed newsletter that we actually send to hundreds of people every single month to your doorstep. So you actually get it in the mail. You can read this sucker. You can highlight it. You can dog ear. You can scratch some stuff out if you don't like that one. You say, no, Joe and Matt, that's not cool for me. But you can take a lot of different strategies, about 15 or so, from every single issue, and it's really cool. So basically, these are actionable strategies that you can use in your business right away to test out and pretty much build on what you already have going on. So check it out. It's at www.egpletter.com. It's pretty amazing. And yeah, you should go check it out. See what it's all about.
Boom.